Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
So, how do we get AI right?
Well, we need the right volume of data, the software to train it, and massive compute power, or...
Another one bites the dust. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat?
But with HPE GreenLake, we get access to supercomputing to power AI at the scale we need, helping generate better insights.
All right.
Nice teamwork, guys.
Search HPE GreenLake.
Five women vying against each other.
Mountaineers who put everything on the line to follow their dreams.
To be the first to climb all 8,000 meter peaks.
The 14 highest mountains.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service presents Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Listen now by searching for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I usually start a new painting with a sketch which I call the lullaby to the vision, because whatever is there in the deep reservoirs of imagination, we are trying to summon it.
Welcome to the documentary in the studio from the BBC World Service. This is the series that gets inside the minds of some of the world's most creative people. I'm Paul Waters, and I am following the Indian artist and graphic novelist Abhishek Singh in Delhi as he paints a picture for his new book of mythology. Abhishek's comic books have sold more than 500,000 copies and have been published in Italian, Spanish, French and English. His interpretation of Indian myth, Krishna, A Journey Within, was the first graphic novel by an Indian writer and artist to be published in American comic book history. He grew up with the ancient myths and folktales of India and then studied animation film design and began to create his own visual versions of Hindu mythology, including his graphic novels Purnam, Stories and Wisdom of the Feminine Divine, and Namaha, Stories from the Land of Gods and Goddesses.
I fell in love with the medium of comic books at a very early age. Be it the comic strips, be it what my grandmother was drawing on the walls for certain family rituals, which were all about nature, I realized what a beautiful, profound combination it is of words and images together. Very accessible, one of the most magical things you can do.
After being inspired by working with elephants, Abhishek realized that most mythic tales concern kings and queens and battles. He decided it was time to create a new non-human mythology for a change. He calls it the Hymns of Maidini. The word Maidini comes from the Sanskrit language of South Asia and means ancient earth. And in this mythology, traditional ideas of human heroes saving the day do not take precedence. It is our vulnerable environment and the animals who live within it which Abhishek puts center stage.
In this particular dimension of Indian theology of India, the moral lens of good and bad is not put here. It's just everything is part of this planet and they're just trying to save it together. And I think that kind of gives a completely different message. And also it's a journey to understand your own cognitive biases. And when you confront that, now it becomes interesting.
Abhishek uses the freedom of painting on large canvases to create his images before they're incorporated into his books. He's about two-thirds of the way through creating his book of the Hymns of Maidini, an atmospheric meditation in which animals rekindle our bond with the earth. I'm going to watch him as he paints the next part of the story.
Delhi morning traffic is never boring, always very colourful. Lots and lots of the characteristic yellow and green auto rickshaws. They're building a new metro along here, so that slows things down a bit. Cavalry charges of motorbikes and mopeds and bicycles piled high with bales of laundry or people carrying sand, all sorts of things. And I am on the way to the Mehrauli district near the Qutub Minar, ancient monument about 800 years old, a minaret, and just almost in the shadow of the minaret is a very large banyan tree, where I am hoping to find Abhishek Singh.
We are meeting at my favourite gallery in Delhi, Ojas Art, where he's creating his latest work. My very poor Hindi gets me past the guards on the gate.
Namaskar, Sat Sri Akal. Abhishek Singh, se milte hai? Dhanyavad.
Inside the gallery grounds, I spot Abhishek communing with nature in his usual spot.
So here we are, underneath the banyan tree, your favourite place. How old do you reckon this is?
This is approximately 150 years old. It's lived a few generations.
And it's a good place to be in Delhi because the leaves are quite thick, so they screen you from the sun and maybe absorb a bit of the pollution. You're not feeling tip-top today. Why not?
It's because around this season, lots of surrounding areas of Delhi, because they've just doing this process with the crops which are already cut and harvested, and they're basically burning their residue. A lot of that starts to find its way into Delhi's air, so that can get a little thickish, and always good to be close to a tree in that scenario.
At first, it looks very calm, nothing's moving, but when you keep looking, it's in fact really busy here. There are ants everywhere.
Yes.
Which is why I'm not sitting down.
It's a whole planet in itself, yes. It's an ecological marvel. The more you look closely, the more you start to see all the microcosms of various worlds which are intertwined in it, the botanical ones of the leaves and the foliage, or of the ants and the squirrels, and all the various birds which house around the canopy. And the more you move into the stratosphere of this tree, you will start to see even kites and eagles taking... they have a nest all the way up there. You know, they have monkeys too here. They come, but they are very gentle. So yes, it's a planet. It's a small relic of Earth.
And you come and sit here. What do you gain from that?
I just come and sit still because I think in a world where we are glancing through everything, I love the moment of this pause, and honestly, there's no bigger motive than just to have a moment of quietness and be with the tree. That in itself is an incentive.
And thinking of the tree as a world in itself, how does that relate to the worlds, the new worlds, the new universe you're trying to create artistically?
In our reality, we cannot perceive us connected with the tree that easily. We are connected, it's just you don't experience it in this reality. So what is invisible in our world becomes visible in the reality of the picture.
I think the ants have found my leg. It may be time for us to move off somewhere else.
We enter Abhishek's current studio, a storeroom with not much natural light. Tigers, turtles, deer and monkeys all feature in the images for his new mythology. But one animal in particular appears again and again, the elephant, which plays the role of guardian of nature. So, we're standing in front of the all-important blank canvas, horizontal, about 2.5 by 5 feet, with some black waterproof ink and a small brush.
I love the brush because I just feel this has got the spirit of wilderness to it.
What do you mean by that?
It can flow in ways where the more you try to control it, the messier it will become. At least in the process I work with, which is to just take the ink and take the brush and draw pretty much straight on the canvas without much underneath sketch. It's a process where there's not much control Z or undos, and there's a certain thrill and an adventure to it, and I think the brush is just the most compatible companion.
Okay, well, blank canvas in front of you, brush in your hand, ink on the brush. Let's see what happens.
Yes, I feel the black and white are the two philosophical colors because one reflects all the light and one absorbs all the light.
So I see you're going right for the center.
And yeah, it's going to be this beautiful... I've been making these elephants as part of my sort of new mythology.
And just in the seconds when you've been speaking, you've already laid out the head of the elephant, the trunk, the tusks, the eye you're just doing now. It's so amazingly quick.
It's like live music, and you're right in the center of it.
So this elephant that is growing before our eyes, the end of the trunk, it's almost like petals of a flower, and you've got, are they leaves or flowers on the elephant's head?
Yes, these are lotuses, because all these lotuses symbolize the breath and the memory and the magicalness of the elephants. It's my humble attempt to incorporate all of that back into the world of nature, into the universe of these beautiful creatures, and precisely why I wanted to make a completely new mythology, because I wanted to go move away from a human-centric mythological stories to more, what if elephants had their own mythology?
Abhishek has always loved elephants, but he realized he had no first-hand experience of them. So he worked at a rehabilitation center for captive elephants and also spent time with a family who kept an elephant to sell rides to tourists.
I learned a great deal. I learned to walk again with the elephants. Elephants are very magical creatures. You know, they can hear a raindrop drumming inside a cloud miles away. It made me imagine that perhaps their hearing is so profound that I don't know if they can hear, you know, the deeper sounds of the sea, the deeper sounds of the air currents, the water currents, even meteoroids, the sound in spaces. And I'm sure there were ancient elephants like that. And precisely why I feel that if I'm drawing next to an elephant, they are short-sighted creatures. They probably will perceive my drawing, this bounce on the canvas with this brush, as a musical composition.
Abhishek volunteered with an elephant near the historic city of Jaipur. From 4 o'clock every morning, he would feed and bathe her before walking 6 or 7 kilometers with her to give rides to tourists. But from day one, Abhishek refused all offers from the elephant's handler or caretaker to join him up on her back.
I said, there is no chance I'm going to sit on top of this majestic being. I'm going to learn how to walk with her. Her name was Rani.
Which means queen.
Queen, yes. And her name was Rani. Although I called her Anusuya, the wise one, because she was very gentle and very, very, very affectionate. And I felt that in that moment, I was hand in hand in a spiritual sense with my grandmothers, who I was very, very close to, and my mother, who I was very close to. I just felt that I just want to be next to her as she would take the hard trek every day. An elephant is not supposed to walk on concrete roads. They contract a lot of small bits into their very soft foot pads, which are designed to only walk on soft grass of the forest. There's untreated abscess. There's a lot of arthritis they develop because of this whole thing. So I would walk every day with them. And on the last day, I told the caretaker that, is it possible to take another path back to our home so she can walk more peacefully? So we took this beautiful walk through the forest, and I also walked bare feet, as touching the earth. If she would stop, we would stop. We would look at the bushes, the shrubs, have a banana. She will eat probably most of the bananas, but we would be happy to share. Elephants eat a lot of food. They are foodies. They love food. They are really the guardians of the forest. They are so essential to the ecosystem of the forest that it's uncanny how much we don't know about the secret language they have with nature and how it all like works, you know.
I'm just laughing to myself, the idea of you and the elephant both going for the last banana. I think I know who's going to win.
Of course, and in that moment, you almost want to give all the joys to them. These are the moments which makes you feel very humbled, which makes you feel that you're sharing this moment with one of the most magical beings, magical child of this planet, this entity who understands a language of nature probably we have forgotten.
What about you? What would your elephant name be? What name would the elephants give you?
The elephants have given me a name which is Atri. Atri sounds like a tree. It also is a Sanskrit word of an ancient sage, one of the seers, which is in the stars and things. But I like that it also just sounds like a tree.
Delhi always feels very noisy to me. The planes overhead, the traffic jams, even the trucks have signs on the back urging other drivers to honk their horns. But Abhishek seems not to notice.
For me, the act of drawing also is a very natural way of entering the dimension of silence. The point you start to draw, you become quiet.
it's actually quite odd to be speaking as I'm drawing.
I know, I'm aware that I'm being very disruptive here. Sorry about that.
Because I feel that, you know, when you're drawing, it's very, very natural that the person becomes quiet, become silent. And for me, that's why drawing is the music of silence, where even the traffic will seep in, will permeate this silence and will become music. It will get cleansed to become music.
So, how do we get AI right?
Well, we need the right volume of data, the software to train it, and massive compute power, or...
Another one bites the dust. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat?
But with HPE GreenLake, we get access to supercomputing to power AI at the scale we need, helping generate better insights.
All right!
Nice teamwork, guys.
Search HPE GreenLake.
Chasing Mountains is the story of five incredible mountaineers competing to become the first woman to climb all 14 of the world's highest mountain peaks, the so-called 8,000ers.
Pitting themselves against nature on the roof of the world.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service. Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
You're listening to the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service. I'm Paul Waters, and I'm following the Indian painter and graphic novelist Abhishek Singh in Delhi as he paints a new mythology which he's calling the Hymns of Medini, centred on animals and nature. When we meet again a few days later, I get to thinking about the Irish myths and legends I grew up with, like Norse, Roman or Greek mythology. They're no longer current. No one is politically invested in them these days. But India is different in that gods and mythology are still very present in people's lives. So how easy will it be to insert a new mythology into such an already crowded living marketplace? And is there really a need?
There are stories which have been in our world for thousands of years, still part of the cultural fabric. And stories are very powerful in terms of dictating our relationship with nature, with each other, or even, you know, propagandists have used stories differently throughout history. So they are very powerful portals. I am almost compelled to do this for the elephants, and it will be my small contribution to all the literature which has emanated from nature, especially of Indian wisdom literature.
As we chat, Abhishek paints in lotus flowers to the head and trunk of the elephant.
The whole trees and the forest coming out of their head. So I give that to the elephants because it's very, very natural for them to be incorporated in the ways of nature. The way they breathe, their trunk is one of the most sophisticated sentient organs. It has 40,000 muscles in it. So it's also to highlight the sheer complexity and the profoundness of their physiology. For me, pictures are that place where a lot of things which are true but you can't experience in your own reality, they are presented to you through the reality of the picture. For an example, a person asked why there are trees coming out of the elephant, why there are lotuses and flowers coming out of the elephant. Usually that's not how they are. And I said, don't we take oxygen from the trees? Don't they take carbon from us? The trees holding the soil, the earth is holding us. All the things around us are interconnected. They are interwoven in this fabric of life. It's just that we don't experience it that way. So what we don't see in our world is seen in this picture. So the picture is a far more profounder truth. But in the picture, you're celebrating it.
Now, even though Abhishek paints quickly, turning his images into books takes a long time.
For an example, my graphic novel on Krishna is 300 pages. It took me about 4 years. Like one of the works in the book took me 3 months to finish.
I was thinking that doing graphic art, doing comics, must be significantly more restricted from your painting your large canvases. But I guess a lot of these actually begin as large canvases anyway, so maybe you have the same freedom regardless of what you're trying to create.
Yes, in my case, it became a bit of a hybrid that in my books there are
also paintings, which are not necessarily done as illustrations in the service of a book project. It is a combination of all sorts of body of work coming together in this one place, which has become the book. It's my dance with the painting with words.
Abhishek shows me a large image from one of his other books. The picture is dominated by the more traditional Hindu god Shiva. Abhishek painted this particular image, a triptych, right beside the river Ganga, or Ganges, which is sacred to Hindus, as it flows by the holy city of Varanasi. He set up his canvases on the Varanasi Ghats, broad steps or platforms, right by where pilgrims bathe in the river. In the story depicted in the painting, when the churning of the water brings forth poison or pollution, Shiva takes action.
Everyone backs out and there's no one who's there to save this ocean, where gods and demons, they want the auxiliary of immortality, a serum which will give them immortality. And they are churning this ocean and various things will come out of it, and eventually this auxiliary will come out. And then this god steps in, it's Shiva, and he purges the ocean from all the poison and he drinks it himself. And I think there's a beautiful message about how to take on to that collective responsibility when it comes to the environment we're living in. And these three canvases, sometimes we had to carry from the platforms onto the boats, and then through those boats carry to the next platform. And people got so invested in interacting with the work. Some would come, stand there, just watch. Some would just come and usher the blessings, which was very, very emotional.
That feels like a huge responsibility on weighing on your shoulders as people watch what you're doing there. They're adding all sorts of extra layers.
What helps me is that I'm mentally an athlete. I'm not so much of an artist. In sports, you have to just try to bring your best and hope that results will just probably flow your way. So my process kind of embodies that a little bit. As much as it embodies music and everything else, it also embodies this thrill and adventure. So I kind of jokingly call it that, what if you pursue drawing as an extreme sport? So you make the wave or you get crashed by it. I guess it's that scenario. With the right kind of focus, you can bring it like really distinct together.
We turn back to the current painting in progress. Abhishek reloads his brush with paint and starts adding a second elephant.
And a baby elephant is emerging, kind of reaching out his or her trunk towards the mother, already looking very cute.
Yes, a baby elephant. There's a little being inside us all, which is yearning for silence, yearning for a nurturing experience, looking for something, being excited by playful things.
We take a break for a few days. There's a religious festival. But afterwards, Abhishek wants to meet again because the painting is nearly finished.
So we are back in the studio. And it's a reminder that this is not only a studio, it's also a storeroom. And there's an event on at the gallery later on today. So people are sorting out glasses and polishing them. This isn't a grand ivory tower isolated from the world and business that we're in. But a lot has happened on the painting. Previously, there was our main elephant with trees growing out of his back and his head. And there was a baby elephant, very cute. But now the background has been filled in and there's also a giant turtle.
So you saw it when it was just a black and white drawing made with a brush on a white canvas. After that, usually I would put a gray wash on the entire canvas. I pour it on the canvas, and as the ink is drying or setting in, I take a cloth and I dab on parts, and the line drawing is my guide there, and I dab out the places I want the light to be in, dark to be in. It's very intuitive. It's very spontaneous a process, but a playful one as well.
So you're holding a brush, and you have white paint on it, or is it white ink?
This is gouache, and now I'm going to take some gouache and highlight some of the areas. It's like trying to add more elements of lighting to it.
Okay, go ahead. So I'm just going to reveal which areas you've chosen. So this is an elephant with four tusks. I don't know if I mentioned the extra pair before, but you're just highlighting some of the tusks.
Just to give a sense of, so the white I'm using
in a way to give a sense of dimension.
And I see another animal trying to get in on the act. I think I've brought an ant from the banyan tree in with me. It's just crawling over a canvas next to the one you're painting.
Yeah,
will it get into the picture? We'll have to wait and see. As you come to the end of a painting, and you're adding the little brightness here, it reminds me of the summer exhibition of 1832 at the Royal Academy in England. I wasn't there personally. So the two stars were John Constable and J.M.W. Turner. Turner's painting was finished, but when he looked at Constable's, which had more red, more colour in it, he added a blob to his painting, and Constable then said about Turner, he has been here and fired a gun. Do you fire a gun as you leave a painting? Do you want to have a final touch, a final brightness, a final focal point? You stand back and think, I need to fire a gun at this.
For me, the painting is finished when what you're trying to create, its presence is invoked. That's it.
You see, I'm just wondering if you're going to add a little bit of extra lightness to the eye of the turtle as a dramatic something to draw the eye. Oh, he's doing it. He's firing the gun at the turtle's eye.
Yes.
So was that just a very good guess of mine about what you were about to do next, or have I actually influenced the painting?
You were a clairvoyant. You called it, and it happened.
This is amazing. I have interacted with art in a beneficial way.
It's quite magical. I'm also personally an onlooker to this whole thing, and that's why there's a childlike innocence I think I've retained, hopefully.
And in a startling development, the ant has made its way to the canvas. It's just reached the top.
I ask Abhishek what impact he hopes his Hymns of Maidenly book will have when it's complete.
I want to represent darkness differently. I think in a lot of stories, I observed that this whole thing of dark versus light, and I think a lot of these stories now in our world are in service of entertainment. But I'm interested in stories to rewire some of the perceptions we have and inquire back into some of the things we think about.
And in this science fiction, fantasy, new mythological world that you're creating, how do you avoid getting lost in a world, a new world of such complexity?
You don't avoid getting lost. It's the inevitable reality of an exploration like that. You must embrace it and then raise yourself to the challenge, to the trek across this magnitude.
Will this stage of your new mythology, this painting, is almost done? What will be the last touch? You've got your white gouache paint on your brush. Where will be the last place to receive a little bit of light?
We can add some leaves on top of the tree coming out of this little elephant here, and brighten the tail a little bit, and just add like a nice dab of white here, some flowers, and that's it. It's done.
The painting is done. That works well. The final touch being on the tail. The end of the tail is the end of the tail. This particular part of the tail, anyway. Thank you very much indeed, Abhishek Singh.
Thank you so much for your patience, and to everyone listening, thank you so much.
I checked in with Abhishek recently, and that picture is now one of about 50 in his book, The Hymns of Maidenly, which should be out next year. But if you can't wait that long, Abhishek has a collection of illustrated fables called Sarvam out very soon. You've been listening to the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service with the Indian painter and graphic novelist Abhishek Singh. It was produced and presented by me, Paul Waters.
So, how do we get AI right?
Well, we need the right volume of data, the software to train it, and massive compute power, or...
Another one bites the dust. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat?
But with HPE GreenLake, we get access to supercomputing to power AI at the scale we need, helping generate better insights.
All right.
Nice teamwork, guys.
Search HPE GreenLake.
The mountains are what keeps me motivated in life.
It's where we get to ask ourselves who we are and who we want to become.
At the turn of this century, five mountaineers set out on individual missions to become the first woman to scale all 14 of the world's 8,000ers. 14 mountains, all above 8,000 meters.
It was about pitting themselves against nature rather than each other.
They knew only one of them would succeed, but whether they liked it or not, it would come to be seen as a race.
Five women vying against each other.
The media needed to find some competition, and they find it.
A race with deadly consequences.
We are just not designed to live in these environments.
Getting down alive was my only goal in that situation.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service tells their story in Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.